I'm Kurt Benkert, and this is Pocket Presence, powered by Sleeper. All righty, welcome back to another episode of Pocket Presence. We loved our Falcons case study so much that we went and flipped the conferences to go into another case study on a team that I think is up and coming. Tyler, we've been talking about them a lot. The Houston Texans. They're making moves. They're refueling this team, not rebuilding. They're reloading. They went and added Stephon Diggs and added him to an offense where he does not need to be wide receiver one. And I think he's going to thrive in that, but we'll get to that later. Before we get started, Tyler, what's up, man? How you feeling? How you doing?
I'm feeling good. I don't know if you saw the tweet from Adam Rank, I believe it was, where he mentioned that this Texans rebuild over the course of the last 2 years, you know, you talk about before Stroud, now after Stroud, is the model that all NFL teams should base their rebuild off of. And he, of course, got dragged on Twitter because if every team could just find a generational quarterback and a great young head coach, I'm sure they would love to. And that's what the Texans have stumbled into. And whether or not it is actually a model, I think it's they're happy. They're happy they've gotten here, however intentional they were in doing it.
Yeah, I think when you look at this team, look, they grabbed guys that were with the 49ers where it started. And I think the 49ers, what they've had the most success out of any other organization is that, yes, they have good players, but their scheme and how they do things, how they operate on the back end has allowed them to, as guys fall off, plug new guys in. And you can look at them, man, every single quarterback that they've had in that system, regardless of how many players they had, had success. You have guys from Nick Mullins to CJ Beathard to Jimmy Garoppolo. Those three alone have not had success outside of the 49ers to like an NFL standard. Mm-hmm. Then you have a guy like Trey Lance, who wasn't playing bad when he got in. He didn't look bad, but he got hurt, right? And then you plug in Brock Purdy, like Mr. Irrelevant, and now he's, you know, was in the MVP running last year. And I think you have those three guys, and let's be honest, they didn't get Christian McCaffrey until, what, two seasons ago? Mm-hmm. They did not always have Christian McCaffrey. And they've just found guys, plugged them into the system. The way that they call their offensive plays sets them up for success. And the way that they play defense piggybacks really well off of their offense. It's very methodical on offense. They chew the clock. They're efficient. They take care of the football. The defense doesn't have to play hero ball. They can just play sound defense, run hard, hit hard. That's the model. It's not rocket science. But some way around the league, it's not many teams are doing it that way. And I just don't necessarily understand why. But you look at some of these teams that have branched off from the Shanahan system. You have the Miami Dolphins, who were terrible. Now they're successful. You have the Houston Texans, who were terrible. Now they're successful. This formula works. And there's one team we'll be talking about way later that's grabbed some San Francisco backbone to it. The Commanders. We'll get to them later. But for this episode, we're going to dive into the Houston Texans and talk about why they are who they are.
So you're saying that the model, while it might also be getting a great quarterback and a great coach, it might just be stealing the coaches and the schemes from San Francisco.
Yeah, and the competent guys, right? Like, you can't just grab anybody from the staff. You got to do your due diligence and stuff. But the thing that I loved about D'Amico Ryans and Bobby Slowick, more so than anything when I was there, it's their demeanor. D'Amico was a former player. So when you have a former player as a coach, you already have a guy that's understanding from both sides. He sees what the coaches have to do. He sees what the players have gone through, what they have to do. And he was really level-headed in how he approached things, even as a defensive coordinator. He could relate to the players, he could talk to the players, and he could flip the switch and be the guy who was in charge. That is really cool to have as a coach. And then you have a guy like Bobby Slowick, who, right-hand man to Shanahan, was just in the nitty-gritty of the details. He was a passing game coordinator for the 49ers. His demeanor was very, like, he was a sharp guy. He's smart. He understands everything, knows everything. He's also like willing to like joke around a little bit, have some fun. He's not just like this hard ass whatever that you get sometimes in the NFL where it's like coaches that are just constantly speaking down on people. Mm-hmm. And so more so than anything, between D'Amico and Bobby, both those guys were relatable with the players. We're able to speak with the players. We're not awkward talking to the players. And when you can have open lines of communication, can talk back and forth from player to coach, coach to player, and be more on the same playing field in dialogue, I think that is a really like underrated factor for success in the league. It's really hard to play with coaches. And this is from vet guys that played talking to me about it, that are not open to communicate, that are just, this is my way. You're the piece, you're plugging in, do it this way. Like, these guys are players, coaches, and they're well-prepared and they're sharp. And I think you have to have a blend of all of that to be successful in the NFL. And Yeah, they nailed it. They nailed it with CJ Stroud. They got a generational talent, a quarterback, a guy that can play within the system, can play on time. He's accurate from the pocket. And then when he needs to stand in there and deliver a big pass downfield while getting smacked in the mouth, he can do that. And he can scramble and make plays out of the pocket with his feet. So he's the prototype, man. He's what you want out of quarterback in the league. They're the types of coaches that you want running your organization. And the fact that they had no coaching changes this offseason, that's a win. Like, that's huge. A huge win.
Maybe their biggest win of the offseason. I mean, you talk about the Stephon Diggs acquisition, but the fact that Slowick stayed when he was one of these top guys for a head coaching spot has to be big.
Like, I think Slowick could be a good head coach. Don't get me wrong. I think his offense, he'd be able to plug in. He'd do really well. But, man, I would love to see him be the head coach for CJ Stroud for, like, 5 years and then just pay him really well. Like, I would love to see what does CJ Stroud's rookie contract look like, being able to lean on Bobby Slowick throughout the entire way. I think some of the coolest things you saw was this year, you saw some like mic'd up clips of Bobby and CJ and how they communicated. And CJ as a rookie was asking for plays, asking for pumps, saying this and that on the field. Like, he was seeing everything and Bobby was receptive of it. And I've been in situations where guys that are like future Hall of Famers, they're all pro players that don't even get that sometimes. And I think the willingness to open up as a coach, to listen to your players and to like curate your offense into things that they like and are most comfortable with ultimately will lead you to success, because you don't want players in positions they're not comfortable in. You don't want to ask players to do things that they're not comfortable doing. And CJ Stroud looked like he was playing free all year long. And I'd imagine that continues this year. They're only getting better.
Yeah. Do you think that relationship is, I know you mentioned that Slowick comes from this group of guys that is okay collaborating with his players. Do you think there's an element of like CJ is just so good so early that he's built up a trust with Slowick? Is this a sort of relationship that you see across the league? Because I'm sure it's not like this for everybody. And I'm definitely sure when you're a rookie, not all rookies get this kind of power with their OC.
Yeah, no, I think there's something that they've seen in CJ Stroud that warrants that. I also think that that's an openness from head coach down to OC to like, look, let's go make this what it can be for him to be comfortable. And I think that kind of having a head coach that was a former player, and I'm just speaking off of what I believe to be true, that probably led to conversations of like, look, hey, get your player in the most comfortable spot possible. Let him do things that make him feel the best, all within the scheme. Like, they're not going out of scheme. They're just, if you have 700 plays in your playbook, why don't we have 200 of CJ's favorite plays to run in the game plan instead of the other, you know, 500 that maybe he's not so comfortable with? And I think you're not seeing CJ Stroud doing things that he's not comfortable doing very much throughout a course of a season, let alone next year. I'm imagining the game plan and the playbook's going to expand a little bit. They're going to see what other people do around the league, start taking and adding to their playbook, but they have their foundation built. CJ Stroud and that offense, their foundation is built. Nico Collins emerges as his guy. He's the true across the middle, big time receiver. Tank Dell's the guy that can take it off the top. And now you got Stephon Diggs. I'd imagine Stephon Diggs has a massive year, especially on third downs and in the red zone. I imagine he's going to be shiftier than he was last year. He's not going to have to play in the cold like that. He's going to play most of his games indoors. I don't know, man. I think we might see a Stephon Diggs resurgence. You're going to see CJ Stroud get that Joe Burrow effect of what Joe Burrow has had in the receiving room since year two with T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, and Ja'Marr Chase. Not to mention a good tight end. Most of you guys already use Sleeper for your fantasy sports leagues. I do too. But Sleeper Picks is a whole other side of the operation that is growing fast. Sleeper Picks is now operational in over 25 different states, and playing the games are simple. You go grab a few player props that you like for that night. You pick over and under, whether it be assists, touchdowns, interceptions, rebounds, goals, whatever sport, it doesn't matter. They got a lot available. You add them to an entry. You can win up to 100 times your money for whatever you put in. And the best part is Sleeper is now matching your first time deposit up to $500 when you type in Kurt at checkout. I'll see you there.
I want to talk about the Stephon acquisition in a second, but as you're talking, it just dawned on me, like, why don't more teams, and maybe there's some teams that you could call out that don't have this sort of collaborative coach player relationship as it pertains to doing what the quarterback feels comfortable doing? Like, you explaining that just makes so much sense to me. Like, of course you would want to talk to your guy, see what he feels comfortable in, and only setting him up for situations where he's going to succeed. But you saying that makes me think that that is not the case across the NFL. And I just wonder, like, what would be a coach's case for saying, hey, I'm going to intentionally put you in situations where you might not be comfortable, theoretically, intentionally putting you in situations where you're going to fail. Like, is there some philosophy around why a coach might choose to do that?
I just think some coaches are stubborn, to be honest. And I'm not just saying it's like a generational thing. There are young coaches that are stubborn and think they know the best, and they might, but quarterbacks are unique. And the way that quarterbacks process is unique. Some people see it very visually. Some people see it spatially. Some people see it as a numbers game. Like, everybody sees the field differently. It's the same thing in my mind as if you ask a kid to solve a math problem without showing his work or her work. Like, some kids can process in a certain way where they, you know, can evaluate a problem and get to a solution this way. And then some people have to take the second path or the third path. Coaches, the way that they process, the way that they see the game, sometimes is different than players. And when you get a good marrying of the two, that's when you have money, because some players are like Peyton Manning and they have to see the field X, Y, Z analytically. Some people see the field with just enough of that and then take it more of like an artist approach, where they're seeing how things flow together and the feel of the game and the flow of the game and what types of throws they'd make in the first quarter on the same exact player, a little different than in the fourth quarter with the game on the line. So I just think some coaches that do not understand the flow of the game or feeling the game out, they're just very analytical, miss that mark with their players sometimes. And there are more players that feel their way through games than analyze their way through games. And I just think that's just kind of how it is. So I don't know. I think more so than anything, you see a disconnect from coaches and they just rotate through quarterbacks and quarterbacks and quarterbacks. They just can't get people to process the same way they do. And then they're out of their job by the time it's all said and done. And it doesn't look like that's the case in Houston, that's for sure. And I've been in rooms where, look, you have older coaches, they're on their way out, they're almost done coaching the league, they've been doing it for 30 years. Well, the game is really different than it was 30 years ago. The way that college players are coached is way different than it was 30 years ago. These air raid schemes, these spread schemes, they're all different than they were. They're not the traditional West Coast. So I was talking to Johnny Manziel the other day, and we were talking about how we were taught football through college. And I learned under Lincoln Riley. Lincoln Riley runs an air raid system. Johnny learned under Cliff Kingsbury, another air raid system. The air raid system is not X's and O's. It's all X's. Like, there are not Y, F, Z. Like, you have some of those receivers, but there wasn't even a playbook. We had no written playbook. It was a verbal, like, playbook with plays that you memorized and routes that you memorized that you could plug and play. But there was no written playbook at all, which is, like, kind of blew my mind in retrospect. And the way that the game was taught was, it's a game of geometry and leverage. So if you have a defender off and inside leverage on a bubble route, as long as he stops his feet, you're going to throw the bubble at the snap. Instead of in the NFL, they'd say, okay, is the nickel over the F? If he's off and inside and his eyes are on him, like, they, the way that it's taught is different. And so you're really playing a chess and a checkers game. They're two different games when you go from college to the NFL. And so when you get guys like CJ Stroud and you get him with a coach that's maybe a little bit more willing to bend and, like, learn about how he sees the game, then you have magic. Where I was stuck in a West Coast system as a rookie, learning under Matt Ryan and Matt Schaub with Dirk Cutter, who was an old school West Coast guy. And, like, they couldn't believe that I didn't, like, that I saw the game the way that I did, because I learned it differently than they did. So I just don't think people realize how different the game is played in college and the NFL. And it's really how it's taught. Like, a lot of us didn't know, like, what was base and sub and, like, what did we call the inside linebacker in a 3-4 defense? Like, they were just, that's a linebacker, dude. Like, he's a linebacker. I don't know what to tell you. And so a lot of guys have to learn those parts of the game. But what I'll say about that system before we're done is the Shanahan system takes a lot of mental stress off the quarterback pre-snap. It's more memorization and, like, our side of the ball, where some other systems are very reliant on what is the other side of the ball doing. Like, not in that system. It's what is our side of the ball doing? Be aware of a guy or two pre-snap and then just go through your reads. So you don't have to change protection. You don't have to get the running back out in protection every single time. If a guy's blitzing, you don't have to re-mic. You don't have to do any of that stuff. You just go line up. If they do this, you do this. If they do that, you do that. So the game is played so many different ways, and you hear quarterbacks talk about it all the time.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Diggs acquisition. Talk about first what he does for this team on the field. And I think there might be an interesting level to this of what a guy like Diggs, and it's been well covered how this is now his third team that he's been traded to, or, you know, forced to trade to. We'll talk about what that does for a locker room, a young core of guys. But first, on the field, what kind of impact do you see him having?
Yeah, I could see him having like a 700 or 800 yard season efficiently. Like, I don't think he's going to have this monster year. I think he's going to have a very contributable to success year. Like, I think he's going to be a key piece to them, especially like we talked about third downs, red zone, the critical plays. He's going to take less coverage and less eyes. He's going to take more eyes off of guys like Nico Collins, guys like Tank Dell. And not to mention, like, they get good quality depth across the board, where some teams, if they lose a guy, dude, the drop off is steep. And I mean, they also, like, Mechie's a good player too. Like, it sounds like they're keeping Mechie. Like, they have a really deep receiving core. They got a good running back room. And I just think this turns into, okay, you want this to be a Nico Collins game where you give him a lot of attention across the secondary. Okay, Diggs is going to eat. He's going to get his completions. He's going to get his catches, receptions, all that. He's going to, you know, C2 split two, get vertical on third down. He's going to get a good yak. Like, I don't see him being the guy they're trying to scheme up routes for him all the time, but I think he's going to find his in the system. And that's kind of how the 49ers have had success. You don't know who's going to pop off in the 49ers offense besides Christian McCaffrey. You know, he's going to get his 20 fantasy points, but some weeks Ayuk has a big game. Some weeks Deebo has a big game. Some weeks Juwan Jennings has a big game. Oh, it's a Kittle game, right? Like, you don't really know. And so I think what this allows them to do is they don't have to scheme up guys as much. They can get good, talented guys running the system, running the concepts, running the crossing routes, and guys are just going to be open. And CJ is going to find them, and some days it might be a Diggs game.
For a young quarterback, I feel like you hear this thrown around when Odell Beckham was moving around. Like you hear a young guy like Baker in Cleveland wanted to feed him targets, and you had this narrative that whether Odell was hurt or when he got shipped out, it was like addition by subtraction, that Baker didn't feel like he had to feed Odell targets. That opened up the offense to flow a little bit more. And I understand this is a completely different situation. And maybe this comes down to how you see Diggs' time ending at Buffalo. But do you think there's any element of CJ now feeling like he needs to feed Diggs just because he's big name, alpha guy, probably is going to come in, assuming he's the number one receiver in the room?
Yeah, I actually don't think so. I think that if the Texans did not have a successful year last year and they were looking for offensive answers, that'd be one thing. But the Texans have a great formula on offense, and they have their guys. They have their room. Like, they don't need Diggs. This is not a savior to them. This is an addition to them that can lessen the load a little bit across the board. So I think for them, they don't look at this like Baker did back in the day, where it's like, I got to feed my guy. He's the stud. Like, no, he's got two studs. Like, Nico Collins is a top 10 receiver in this league. And I don't care what anybody says. The way that he played, the things he was able to do, he can move all over the field, play different positions across the board at receiver, and he can make plays. Diggs honestly is going to have to take a back seat to Nico Collins. And people might think that's crazy, whatever. Just turn on the tape. Nico is a dog. He's young. He's a stud. He's massive. Diggs is going to just piggyback off of his success. And he's going to be more open because of Nico. He's going to be more open because of Tank Dell. And I think that the yards that Diggs earns this year are going to be easier earned yards than he had to earn in Buffalo. Because in Buffalo, dude, like, until the very end, they had to throw to the tight end all the time. Like, Gabe Davis was nowhere to be found most of the year. Shakir started popping off at the end, and Diggs had a lot of eyes on him all over the field. He does not have to be that guy anymore. He can just go fit in, be that slot receiver, be the guy that's very specific on what he's asked to do, and just go play ball and enjoy the success that the Texans are about to have for the next run.
Yeah, I think there's a really interesting element here where the Texans voided the final 3 years of Diggs's contract. So he's basically on a one-year deal with the team, can hit free agency next year. There's this feeling that for Diggs, it just has to work. Like, in order for him to, whatever reputation he's now carrying as a guy who is trying to trade out, and a lot of that is, like, I don't think that's always fair to prescribe to a player. I think it's very situational. We don't always know what's happening behind the scenes. And so regardless of what's been created around him, the narrative created around him, I think he probably does need to make it work. And I think if that means slotting in behind Nico Collins, he seems like he's just going to make it work this year.
Yeah, I think this is going to be the year that Diggs just puts his head down, goes and tries to ride this wave of success, and he's going to have a good year. He's going to make plays when he gets the ball in his hand. I think he's going to be reliable. I think he's going to be the guy that he used to be. And I think that he's in a locker room that's young and talented. And this locker room is going to stick together for the next 5 to 10 years. Like, they're going to have core guys that are on this team now. That'll be the reason why they have sustained success. And so Diggs, on the tail end of his career, just be the vet that comes in, bring your insight, bring your perspective. I think he's going to do that. And I think he's going to be a value add to them this year.
One final addition we'll talk about here, Joe Mixon. They kind of had a running back room by committee last year in Houston. It was Damian Pierce that we thought was going to be the guy. And then I forgot who they were leaning on at the end of the year, but it was somebody that was not named Damian Pierce. So now they have Joe Mixon, like a true, it was Singletary, a true RB1. What does that do for Stroud this year? Does it open him up for more things? Because last year wasn't really a huge running game to speak of.
Yeah, I think Mixon is a good downhill runner. Like he just finds a way to fall forward most of the time when he gets through the first lane. And to be honest, I look at this running back room. I know we're saying Mixon's RB1. I think he is RB1. But I think RB2 and 3 are going to get a lot of burn too. I think you're going to see this system. Dude, it's going to feel like the old 49ers pre-McCaffrey. Like, McCaffrey is RB1, right? He's RB1-1. I think this is going to be like when they had Mostert with the 49ers, where he was kind of the back for this and they have the back for that. Like, kind of similar to the Dolphins right now. They got Achane and they got Mostert. Like, I don't think that Mixon needs to be the guy. I think he will be, you know, the primary, but you're gonna have the other guys getting burned too. And I think that's what makes this offense very dangerous, is because they don't need anybody to be the guy. I think the most valuable person on this offense besides CJ Stroud is going to be Nico Collins. If Nico Collins does not finish the year healthy, that's the only guy that I'm like, damn, he's not replaceable. Like, they don't have that type of guy. But everybody else, I'm like, okay, like they can patch this up as the season goes on, as injuries pile up, whatever. But I think it's going to be by committee with a strong lead by Mixon.
Okay, I like that. Final thing I want to talk about before we jump over the defensive side of the ball. We've talked a lot about CJ Stroud. We had a great conversation with Kurt Warner. You guys both love Stroud, and there's obviously a lot to love coming off an offensive rookie of the year season. What jump or what improvements do you need to see from Stroud? Because I think when we get into these conversations, we just assume there's going to be an infinite, like he has an infinite ceiling and he's only going to keep getting better. And of course he's going to get better, but I think in that we lose the nuance of, oh, there's some things he could do better. He's not going to keep making these quantum leaps. Like, there's, you know, there's like a ceiling to all of this. So how do you think about Stroud's progression coming into next year?
Dude, I'm not going to lie. There's not much more he could do to be like that much better. I think navigating like pressure situations, like getting the pre-snap plan, maybe. I think he can elevate a little bit more in like zero pressure situations where you have these toolboxes of things that you like that are not a part of the game plan. So like you saw Jordan Love do it towards the end of the year last year, where he's tightening tight ends in, changing the protection, completely changing the play entirely. Stroud, I think, probably can get to that point where he's not just like, these are my options for this play, let me go navigate. When he adds that toolbox to his game, and when they allow him to, and that's not a big thing in the Shanahan system, they don't really have quarterbacks checking a whole lot, but when he can change play one or two into play Z completely off the rails, when he sees a look that he saw on film that was a few weeks back, gets the guys all on that page, that's when I think he can make that, oh shit, you can't do anything to touch him. Right now he's very much still playing within the system and he's doing a great job of it. He's navigating it. He's still making plays that you're like, oh shit, that's not a great look, but you made it work. I think he can do getting them into the best look possible more often throughout the season. And that's between him and his coaches. So not every team has that. Like, for instance, when I was in Green Bay, it was rule number one was basically get your running back out in protection, which means to the casual fan, if they have four down rushers and they're blitzing to the side of the running back, you're going to slide the protection or re-mic to the guy that's blitzing over the back. So he loses his pass protection responsibilities and can get out to be the fifth receiver in the route concept. Right now, the way that the 49ers and the way that the Texans and those teams do it, if you're getting blitzed from your running back's protection responsibility, you're going to replace him with the throw. So you're going to throw a slant and you're going to get 5 yards and you're going to move on to the next play. I like playing that way when you have to, because you can play on time, on schedule, you're not thinking too much. Sometimes you can create your own problems. But there are situations where it's like, dude, I got this shot. I got this post that's going to come open. If I could just buy that little extra time by changing the protection, re-miking, whatever, we could really take a shot here. And those are things that I think you have to toe the line of. And I think I want to see CJ Stroud have to do that a little bit. I'm excited to see what they put on his plate. I know he can do it. I know he's capable. It's just more philosophically, are they going to do that this year? Well, I don't know. So that's really it, because when you watch his tape, dude, he is on time. He's accurate. He's playing with good feet, good like posture. He's delivering clean balls all the time. I mean, he's quarterback teach tape as a rookie, which is insane. That's why we were all so impressed as former players to watch him, because I was like, dude, it took a long time to get to that point for me, like to feel at that point, let alone just in practice. So he was polished coming out, and I think that's why we liked him. And then he was able to translate, not lose some of that going into his first season as a starter.
Yeah, that's really a nice way to tell me there really is no ceiling to this thing. Like as much as he can learn and intake and respond on the field, like it almost is scary to think how much more he has yet to be able to do.
He has like, that's the thing. People look at him as like an athletic quarterback. Like what makes him really special is him as a pocket passer, which a pocket passer has no expiration date on their career. As you've seen, guys like Aaron Rodgers, guys like Tom Brady, those are the guys that have the longest career possible. And that's kind of like what I liked seeing about Dak Prescott last year, is he turned more into a pocket passer with his feet and his rhythm and his like all that stuff. That's why he had a monster year, because you're able to be consistent. And yeah, the defense is going to have good plays, but the more you consistent you can play with your feet and within the pocket and with guys around you in your lap and still delivering throws, you can play this game for a really long time. And some guys have it, some guys don't. And CJ Stroud has it from year one. And I'm like, CJ Stroud could legitimately have a Tom Brady type career. And that's something that even Mahomes has gotten better at. Everyone loves Mahomes' like crazy plays that he makes. Mahomes this year, especially in the playoffs, managed situations really well and was a good pocket passer, where he used to have to thrive in the off schedule. And so guys, when they get more time to develop, they become better pocket passers. It's rocket science. What do you know? And that's why I'm so high on CJ Stroud, because he can navigate he'll get to the point where he's navigating situational football like Tom Brady did. He'll get to the point where he's got pre-snap alignments, pre-snap adjustments, all that stuff like Peyton Manning did, only when he needs to. Like, his toolbox can be infinite because of how good of a player he is already.
Yeah, let's flip over to D'Amico and this defense. It seems like he could take a group of scrubs and make it a top 10 defense. And of course, they don't have a group of scrubs. They came off a pretty solid defensive year. What are you looking for? Maybe it's targets in the draft. Maybe it's, hey, I want this guy to develop a little bit more.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just explaining to me how D'Amico could theoretically take a bunch of replacement level players and make them really good.
Yeah, so the D'Amico scheme, the way that they run that scheme, like, look, it's can you play sound defense? Can you match coverage? Can you be sticky at the point of attack? And can you get pressure with four? Like, if you can get pressure with four in the NFL and not need a fifth rusher, that means you don't need as good of players in the secondary. You don't need as good of linebackers that can cover, because there's a little less space on the field. So the way that that philosophy is built out is, can you get pressure with four down linemen and can you stop the run? After that, let's just play ball. And so they don't have a pick until the second round of the draft. And who knows if they trade up or they not, but like, They got some guys they added, right? We're looking at Derek Barnett. We're looking at Will Anderson. They got Desmond King, Stingley Jr. Like, they've got some guys. Barnett is a massive add for them. Like, I kind of can't believe that happened. That adds to their equation of, can you get pressure with four? You need a stud DN. You need a guy like Myles Garrett. You need a guy. You need that guy. And they just went and got one. So at the draft, I'm like, who knows who they have fall in their lap at round two. I think they need a defensive guy. I think they need a defensive guy. But then you start looking at like, okay, secondary wise, are we going to get a guy? I mean, they got Jimmy Ward, who has just been a staple of the 49ers defense for a long time. He's been good in their defense last year. They just need competitive guys that can run and hit. And so do you have a safety that falls into that category? Do you have a linebacker that's athletic that falls in that category? I think they'd be, if a guy like Peyton Wilson falls to them, so help me God, do they not have a Fred Warner of this draft class? Does he fall to, I think they have pick number 42. It's not looking like it, but maybe. And if he does, like, I could see them getting this freak linebacker that can always be on the field. Because if you have a linebacker that can cover, he can play in nickel, he can play in base, he can stay in there and dime, like, sometimes, right? Like, dime would be an extra DB instead of nickel. But you get to this point where, look, what's our philosophy on defense? Can we get a guy that's versatile? And I think that's what they need to look for, because you have your four down linemen, they can cover themselves, they can get pressure. That's how they need to build it.
What makes it what makes it hard to face a defense like that? I imagine when you have four down linemen getting pressure, just there's mm-hmm. like objectively more people out there to cover and out there to be concerned about. But is there something specific that D'Amico and this defense do to make it difficult on quarterbacks specifically?
Yeah. So when you have four down linemen, like this is the toughest thing to deal with when you are a quarterback. Look, if they are blitzing, meaning bringing five or more, there is open space somewhere. You just got to find it. And you have to hope that your play call has the answer in that specific spot to exploit it. If you're getting pressured with only four people rushing you, there's not a quick pass lane typically to get the ball out. And they have, I mean, it's geometry, it's math, right? Like, so if there's 11 people in the field and four people are rushing, that means that seven people are in coverage. There's less space across the board. If you have five people rushing, then there's six people in coverage. The space goes a little different. And also the types of coverages they can play are different. If you guys are Madden players, you can see visually what it looks like. And even on the field, it's the same thing. So the other thing is some teams need to bring six, like that's zero blitzing. And then they only have five people playing coverage. That is five one-on-ones. You're playing one-on-one. You just have a fraction of a second less to get the ball out. But it's just tough because the best teams in the league, in my opinion, that are consistently making to the Super Bowl, that are consistently making deep runs, they don't need to light it up to get pressure. And that's why the 49ers have had such sustained success. They got Bosa. They had Armstead for a while. Chase Young this year. When you can drop back and have a guy like Fred Warner be both good in the run game and in the pass game because he doesn't have to cover as much space because other guys aren't blitzing, that's an asset. And that's what I would love for them to have, is to get a linebacker that's like that in the draft. If he's available, don't reach for somebody, but you have a guy that can stay on the field at all points of time. Fred Warner is in every single package. He's never off the field, where there are some linebackers that come off the field so a DB can go cover a tight end. And that's not ideal when you're a play caller, because you do have to call plays for the guys that are on the field and hope for the best.
So I want to end on this. We often talk about, and I thought this was a great discussion around how great the mm-hmm. Texans are. And we have a really positive outlook on them. I want to put in the context of the AFC and the rest of the league, because I think I forgot who said it, probably multiple people at this point, but think about how many quarterbacks Tom Brady prevented from winning a Super Bowl, multiple Super Bowls. And I think CJ Stroud has a Tom Brady-esque character in Patrick Mahomes in his division, where we can be as high on the Texans as we want to be, but especially in the context of the AFC and all of these talented mm-hmm. young quarterbacks, it's not going to be a cakewalk when you put it into perspective. So, you know, maybe talk about how you see them fit into the AFC South and then the AFC writ large, given that it's the conference of really talented young quarterbacks.
Yeah. So I think honestly, what CJ Stroud has right now is Tom Brady's kind of path to the playoffs every year. Very similar. Like some people look at Trevor Lawrence like he's a franchise guy. I personally do not. I don't think he showed enough to be the franchise guy. I think he's got a year that this next year is going to be massive for him. Does he have all the talent? Yes. Does he make really bad decisions with situational football? Yes. Did they lose weapons this year? Yes. And did he play injured last year? Yeah, he did. But the way that he plays, I'm just like, dude, if you take Trevor Lawrence out of the equation and what people think he can be, if he ends up not being who they think he's going to be as a good player, he has a Tom Brady, New England Patriots type of path to the playoffs every single year. You have the Titans, who are not that good. You have the Jacksonville Jaguars, who obviously crumbled last year. Who else is? And then they have the Colts. The Colts, like, is Anthony Richardson going to be that guy? We don't know. But like, nobody's really shown us anything. Tom Brady had the really bad Miami Dolphins every year. The Jets, who some years were decent, some years were not. And then they had the Bills, who were really bad for most of the time, except for when Fitzmagic showed up a little bit and made some plays. Like, you want to be in a division that's bad or has the least amount of guarantees as possible. And I look at the AFC South very much like the NFC South. Like, the Falcons and Kirk Cousins have the best path to the playoffs. And my whole thing is, get yourself the best path to the playoffs as often as possible. Let the other teams beat themselves up to try to get there with the pressure of what it takes. Like, look at the Chiefs, dude. Their path to the playoffs was not easy. Their path in the playoffs was not easy. They were a lot of road games. And so Joe Burrow wasn't a factor last year because he didn't play most of the season. Let those teams duke it out. And I think that's what CJ Stroud kind of has, is like, you could be the Texans and lock up the number one seed simply for the fact that your schedule was the easiest. And it's all about what seed do you get in the playoffs? Can you be that team? Can you get home field advantage? Like, can you set yourself up that way? And I think looking in the horizon, like, the Texans have the best chance to do that, right? Like, mm-hmm. out of any team in the AFC. You look at the NFC or the AFC North, Baltimore, Cincinnati, Cleveland are going to just kill each other all year long. And then the Steelers might squeak out a win or two. Then mm-hmm. you look at the Chiefs. The Chiefs have Harbaugh coming to town, right? Like, who knows what that's going to look like? You have the Raiders, who are going to get better next year. And then who else is in their division? And then you have the Broncos. The Broncos, like, who knows? Peyton could be fired after this year. They could get a quarterback that changes their stuff. Like, who knows? I would not be shocked to see Sean Payton out there next year. So Mahomes has been the beneficiary of the same exact thing for most of the time. Their division has been weak as shit. So
yeah,
maybe they're not so weak, and maybe Mahomes doesn't get the same run. Like, who knows? But I just think CJ Stroud has this wild, like, alignment for things that could go well for his career with a weak division, with the right staff, the guys that are willing to build around him. And I hope they keep it together for a long time, because they're fun to watch.
Yeah, two things you said there. I remember we had a conversation probably sometime in season where we were ogling over the AFC South a little bit, because at the time they had Richardson, who was playing well. Shane Steichen came on to turn into a really head coach this year, even when they didn't have Richardson. Yeah. Will Levis was young and exciting, and obviously Mike Vrabel's a great coach, was a great coach for the Titans. And then you had Trevor Lawrence, who I think a lot of people still, like you mentioned, like Trevor Lawrence. So it was sort of this division of young, promising quarterbacks. But now, as we sit here in the offseason, you have to look at it and be like, what's the sure thing? And the sure thing is CJ Stroud is good, DeMeco Ryans is good, Bobby Slowick is good, and all of these other teams, you can be excited about them, but they also have massive question marks at all of the key positions. And so when you forecast in the next 10 to 15 years, you probably just take the sure thing, which is, sure, maybe Anthony Richardson and Shane Steichen can figure it out, but we know right now that CJ Stroud and DeMeco Ryans are kind of a power. And so they probably have the easiest path, like you mentioned.
Totally. And I mean, look, dude, the NFL is competitive. Like, you can't slack on anything, but if the course of time says anything, good head coach paired with a good quarterback, a lot of good things happen. And right now in that division, that's the only one that you can bank on right now. And I don't know, man, I'm excited about the Texans. I think they got a lot of exciting things coming. I think it's really cool to see them gel this early with how young their team was. And the sky is the limit. Now, look, they have a lot of expectations. They do have a target on their back now. They are not going into the years this unknown. So people will be a little bit more ready, but they're going to be better too. And I like the offseason additions they've made. I'm really excited to see who they pick up in the draft. I would not be shocked, knowing DeMeco, that he does not have his eyes on a guy like Peyton Wilson. If he falls to him, I think he'd be a massive fit, could change the game for them on defense, or, well, not change it, but add to them. So I'm excited. I love these case studies. I think they're fun because we really get to go and get some depth. Like, a lot of times we're covering surface level stuff on teams, but we're able to talk nuances of defense and the difference between dime and nickel, and like, why you might not even need to go into dime if you have a linebacker that can stay on the field, and why teams need all these packages or don't, depending on their roster. So it's fun for me. I enjoy it. I think it's something that people enjoyed, obviously, from the last one, and we're going to do some more of these.
Hell yeah. It was awesome. I think it's exciting. And I'll add for the Texans, I think it gets really exciting when the thing gets rolling. You mentioned Tom Brady and how it was just constant chaos in the AFC East. And a lot of that is probably due to the fact that they're always trying to rehire coaches, redraft quarterbacks that can stack up against Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, which is a tall task to ask. And once you get DeMeco Ryans and CJ Stroud rolling, and that's the standard that you have to hire your own coaches and draft your own quarterbacks towards, you start to see teams slip fast and teams remain dominant in divisions, like you could see the 100%. Texans doing for the next 15 years.
Yeah, dude. I mean, you look at the Titans, dude, as much as people love Levis, the coach that drafted him, I guess they sold the GM, but like, they're one bad year away from a new whole everything. And then Levis was no longer the guy that the new staff brought in, right? Like, that's how that turnover happens. And then they draft a guy that's new and young. And like, regardless of if guys are good or not, I mean, how many coaches have the Jets been through in Tom Brady's career? The Dolphins, like the Bill. I mean, it's just, Peyton Manning would have probably a few more Super Bowls if he didn't have to go through Tom Brady. every single time. If Peyton Manning was an NFC quarterback, you probably would have seen Peyton Manning and Tom Brady most years in the Super Bowl. And that's what we're dealing with. And that's why in my opinion, the 49ers have been able to have such sustained success, because their path to the playoffs, you don't have that one game like the Bills have every year that's like, man, we're the better team, but we didn't find a way. Like, you can just kind of stick to being the consistent, like, keep sticking to your formula. You don't have to have a superhero get you there. That's why the NFL is so fun, man. There's so many different dynamics and different pieces to it that make every year different and exciting. So that's another episode of Pocket Presents, man. These are fun. I enjoy it. We got more on the way, and the draft is slowly approaching.
It's going to be exciting. Make sure to comment a team that you might want us to do a case study on next. Yes. We're always looking for great ideas. Like, subscribe to the channel. Thank you guys for watching.
Do it all. See you guys.